What is different now is the penetrating scholarship that is being applied, not obviously the project of understanding the Bible itself. He brought out in stages over a period of years a French translation of the whole Bible. Now, in 1521, some of his teachings were actually condemned by the Sorbonne, and he fled for a while to Strasbourg. It was not so terribly difficult, actually, in those days to run afoul of ecclesiastical authorities because of one's teachings. Now, later, the Protestant reformers claimed him as one of their own, but he never accepted their central doctrines. He never himself abandoned the Catholic Church. So the new learning did not lead him to new forms of religious experience, as indeed would be the case with some of the thinkers whom we'll encounter in the next couple of lectures. Let's cross the channel and go to England. John Colet. Colet was born in 1466. He died in 1519. He came from a wealthy London family. He received a fairly traditional education at Oxford. In this, he's much like Jacques Lefebvre. It was rather unusual in his day for having spent a period of time in Italy, and indeed in Florence. And not unlike Jacques Lefebvre d'Etaples, he was in Florence just at the time when Pico della Mirandola and Marsilio Ficino, the great Platonists, were teaching there. Now, there's a number of interesting things going on here. Colet is one of a new generation in the North who know Greek as well as Latin. Latin learning, of course, had been common for a long, long time. Greek learning was comparatively rare. We've also had occasion to see that the scholastic tradition of the North was deeply rooted in the philosophy of Aristotle, and more particularly in the logic of Aristotle. Now we're beginning to see a Platonic turn. People are beginning to turn to Plato. And, of course, this can imply many, many things, but among others, it's going to imply that the world as we see it around us may be deceptive, may not reveal all its secrets to our immediate sense perception. There may be more here than meets the eye, to put it most simply. From 1496 to 1504, he lectured on St. Paul's epistles in Oxford, and he began applying to the text of Paul's epistles the kind of textual, critical, and philosophical tools of the humanists. In the process, he cultivated a very deep dislike for medieval scholasticism. This was something which he shared with a number of his contemporaries. But now, instead of working within the scholastic mode, within the dialectical mode, solving problems by the application of logic, no, now what will happen with writers, thinkers like John Colet, is one will work in a more scholarly mode. That is to say, understand languages, understand history, understand philosophical backgrounds, understand literary conventions. So, the learning and program of the Italian Renaissance, again, typically they are applied to the literary monuments of antiquity, now being applied by John Colet, for example, to St. Paul's epistles. In 1505, he founded St. Paul's School in London, which quickly became a very important and influential school. It remains to this day a very, very good school in the city of London. Now, Colet was not only a devotee of the new learning, he was also, and he shared this with a number of his contemporaries, deeply and bitterly critical of the abuses and the corruption of the church in his time. He spoke out on a wide variety of issues. He made churchmen uneasy, though they never threw him overboard, nor was he tempted to jump. But the point is that a considerable amount of his scholarly work led him also to criticize the behavior, the conduct, the practices of the church in his time. Now, having discussed an English figure like John Colet, we might turn to others. For example, his friends, Thomas More and Desiderius Erasmus. Let's, in the first place, talk a little about Thomas More.